Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, IL Preps Nation? I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and we are back for another fantastic episode of the IL Preps Podcast. We have a few scores to hit, a few results to make sure we touch on, and then we'll be getting into three different recorded segments. I guess you could call them interviews, though one of those segments is with IL's own Terry Foy. And then we'll also have a segment with Valor Christian's Jeremy Noble and Malvern Prep's Matt McCready's. So we are thrilled to bring this episode to life. A few results here to hit quickly before we shift into our recorded segments. We had quite the bit of action in the Philly area as Haverford doubled up McDonough and beat them 14-7. Malvern 13-7 over Loyola Blakefield, where Philly owns the MIAA on Tuesday, March 19th. We had BL 9 take down Gonzaga 6, and that was at Gonzaga. Landon 12, St. Mary's 6, in a result that is, again, another one that is not so great for the MIAA. Culver in D.C. takes down St. John's. Westlake over IMG in a game that'll have some regional ramifications in the South. And same with Legend over Redwood in that 12-11 game. That'll definitely have some ramifications out West. And then Hill is down in the Mid-Atlantic area. They took down Calvert Hall last night. They'll see LaSalle tonight. And we'll have McDonough on Friday. So Hill has quite the week down in the Mid-Atlantic area. I'm excited. I'll be able to catch that Hill versus McDonough matchup here on Friday night. We also had IL's Terry Foy, who is kind enough to join us and discuss all of that action on site last night for that Hill versus Calvert Hall matchup. And the final result I'll draw a little bit of attention to here is Blue Ridge over Paul VI in some Virginia action where Blue Ridge took them down in a 12-11 battle. So certainly a close one there between those two teams that are both budding under new coaches with Donnie Moss at the head of the Blue Ridge School and Coach Jeff Schwartz at the head of Paul VI. So definitely two more teams and an interesting result to have in mind here. But yeah, like I said, we're going to dive into some preview here, starting with myself as I'll head to the Annapolis area for Spalding as they host WRA. Thursday night, I'll be in the house. We have a baby class, so for those who don't know, my wife and I are expecting, so Thursday night will be one for the family. Friday night, right back on the scene, though, and headed out to Hill and McDonough for a game that is sure to be action-packed. McDonough, after losing tonight versus Haverford, will have plenty of ground to make up and a statement to make, I'm sure, for the rest of the high school world. So, with all that said, let's go ahead and dive into our recorded segments. The first one we have here is with myself and Terry Foy, where we'll talk about a few games that we were able to catch. I got eyes on Lawrenceville Calvert Hall on Friday. Terry got eyes last night on Calvert Hall and Hill. And then he also was able to catch the probably biggest matchup so far in the high school season. Actually, definitely the biggest high school matchup of the season so far with Culver and St. Anthony's, and that was in Piscataway at Rutgers. So fortunately, Terry was able to catch that one as well. We'll talk about those three games specifically and then kind of move on to our recorded segments with two coaches, Coach Noble, the head coach of the Valor Christian program, and Coach Matt McCready's, the head coach of Malvern Prep. Those two teams are set to square off before our next IL Preps podcast, so we'll definitely touch back in on that matchup. But more importantly, please be sure to go ahead and dive in on each one of those segments and hear all about both Malvern and Valor through the eyes and lens and voice of their head coach. What's up, IL Preps Nation? This is your host, Dan Kaplan. And like I said in the intro, we have a bunch of good segments here in this episode. The premiere segment, though, will be with myself and Terry Foy, who will kick it off and talk about a few different games here, starting St. Anthony's Culver.
Yeah, let's do it. Premiere is you're putting a lot of pressure on me, man. I'm not sure that I'm ready for that.
I am, and I think that both of those interviews with Coach McCready's and Coach Noble are two of the best yet. So if you're somehow listening to this but aren't planning to listen to those interviews, first of all, what are you doing? Second of all, make sure you stick around and listen through all of it.
Perfect. Well, again, they're two of the best yet, meaning better than Coach Dawson, Coach Zissi, for example, then again, the pressure is just mounting. So I have enjoyed your work with Kevin Brown last week when you guys got eyes on a couple of really exciting games, and I hope that I can live up to the billing. But yeah, no question about it. I was in New Jersey on Sunday to watch the number 2 and number 4 teams in the Q Collar preseason Inside Lacrosse National High School Rankings Top 25. I wish we could make the title of that ranking even longer. I don't think it's possible. But with that being said, it was a game that lived up to the billing. Close and comparatively low scoring early. St. Anthony's defense really carried the weight until midway through the third quarter when St. Anthony's, the Friars, really kind of found their offense. A lot in transition, a lot in unsettled situations, built a 9-5 lead, and then basically held on for the entirety of the fourth quarter and managed to seal the win by virtue of, again, some really solid defense and some excellent goalie play.
And that defense, really the entire roster, but the defense has some new faces on it. Dante Vardaro was a guy that clearly stood out. Tommy Snyder, another that made a bunch of different plays that showed up both on stream and on Dan Abern's sideline highlights.
Yeah, he killed it.
What did you see from that St. Anthony's defense that kind of really stood out to you?
Yeah, so obviously, the long poles are both well-known and well-discussed. So Vardaro was a player that I wasn't as familiar with as, say, Parker McDonald or Ethan Bramoff coming in. You know, Parker McDonald was one of the more sought-after members of the class of 2025. Ethan Bramoff is in the conversation for the number one player in the 2026 class. And so, you know, it just catches your attention. And also, you know, we've talked about this before, whether it was on this podcast or elsewhere, but the seniors in the recruiting cycle tend to get forgotten a little bit. And so when the high school season rolls back around and you realize these are the best and most important players, then it's kind of like a refresher, especially because the last time we saw them in, you know, kind of heavy rotation, so to speak, they were juniors on their high school team, right? Because at that point, they basically all committed. And so, you know, they weren't really in the most prominent roles in their high school team. They were 9 months away from being the focal point of the recruiting circuit. And so there's this weird middle ground, this interregnum, if you will, that they exist in. And so for those reasons and more, when I saw Dante Vardaro, who is, you know, this kind of massive, hulking, heavy wood shopping defenseman with a knee brace, he just stands out. And the way in which this game unfolded depends a lot on your perspective. And talking to Coach John Bersner for Culver after the game, his point of view was the game unfolded very similarly to how they anticipated it unfolding, which was, he felt like they were going to be good in settled situations, and they really needed to cut down on their opponent's unsettled situations where they were going to be more vulnerable. And so he was really frustrated by how many good looks they got and missed the cage offensively in the first quarter, and how many transition opportunities they gave to St. Anthony's throughout the game, and how much those opportunities were taken advantage of. And so from that point of view, I think if you're Culver, you can look at it and say, we lost this game. But I don't share that point of view. From my point of view, I saw a defense led by Vardaro that made it very difficult for Luke Macaluso and Aiden McDonald to get the looks that they wanted. And, you know, I don't want to say anything that's too harsh or too strong. For example, I don't want to say that those guys pulled themselves out of the game and started to mitigate their own ability to impact the game, because I don't know that that's what happened. But what I do know is that as the game went along, Mason Shuchek and Patrick Krogan started to be the guys who actually imposed their will on the game a little bit more. And I don't know. You've seen more of this Culver team than I have. Are they at their best when that's what's happening? Early on, Christian Hogan, I felt like was really involved, and he got a little bit less involved as the game went along. And then, like I said, I mean, you know, for St. Anthony's in offense that graduated the number one player in the class of 2023 in Owen Duffy and has to replace not just that level of talent, but also that level of orchestration, I thought that Luke Breslin did a really nice job of composing things, right? They didn't rely on his production. If I were going to guess, I didn't see the final stats. I would say he finished with 1-1, maybe 1-2, maybe 2-1. But like, you know, for a 9-goal performance, that's a good, you know, he had a hand in 33% of the goals, but his impact on the game was greater than that. And it was really about, you know, facilitating a couple of guys alongside him in Quinn Langton and James Rigonelli, who's going to Iona, the lefty. And those guys took advantage of their opportunities. Rignelli, the most substantial one being handling a rebound around the midline and then turning it into a goal, which was one of the most significant momentum swinging plays in the second half. And so just all in all, a really high level game, a lot of athletes on the field. I mentioned Dante Vidaro was the player that I came away the most impressed with. The other player that I came away most impressed with was Kyle Bolello, the midfielder from the senior midi from St. Anthony's, who's going to Brown. He was a D midi last year, and now he finds himself in kind of a primary offensive role alongside the number two ranked player in the class of 2025, Gary Merrill, heading to North Carolina. And the thing that impressed me the most about Bolello, well, I guess there were two that were kind of tied. A, his smarts. Specifically, in the last 5 minutes of the game, I chalked up either three or four decisions that he made that felt like winning plays. They were this is an opportunity to control the tempo, to eat clock, and I'm going to subjugate my own desire to get stats. I'm not going to concern myself with the fact that there are 25 guys on the sideline taking Instagram highlights. I'm just going to make the right winning play. And then the other thing was just like an MF-er attitude that did not care about who was standing in front of him and what was required other than winning the game. And I was very, very impressed by Bolello in that way. And yeah, I mean, the only other player that I have to kind of reiterate is the goalie Ford. I thought he was awesome. You know, talking to a couple of folks coming away from the game, he's the type of player where the reaction is like, yeah, we've seen it all along. But the question is like, to what extent does he want it? And we want to see him grab it. And maybe that was the performance that they needed to see in order to know that that was what was going to happen going forward. But a big win for St. Anthony's, their first win of the season. They now get, 11 days off until they have their second game when they host St. John's. They're taking on St. John's at Drexel. You know, meanwhile, obviously Culver got off to a 5-0 start. And then after losing on Sunday, they headed south and got ready for their DC trip that included St. John's and Gonzaga.
All right. So in that breakdown, you said like four or five things that I have answers to. But before I get to any of that, I have another question on game flow. As that thing was kind of playing out, one element going into it that was on my head was this element of, you know, Culver, who obviously has more than debuted. They have a solid batch of games under their belt. What that also means is that St. Anthony's has their pick of their letter to kind of create a scout and to know what's coming their way. St. Anthony's was on the complete other side of that, where Culver had no scout. It was so many new guys across the roster. Did you feel like that was, you know, an element of like St. Anthony's knew what was coming and Culver was trying to figure it out? And how did that kind of like play out throughout the game?
Okay, so in order to answer that question in the best way I can, I have to skip ahead to the next game we're going to talk about, which is, I presume, Calvert Hall versus Hill Academy. Hill Academy very clearly looked like a team playing their first game. And not only that, like a bunch of guys who play box lacrosse that don't remember what offsides is, right? So like in that context or through that lens, no, it didn't look like that at all. Talking to Coach Weiserich after the game, he was like, yeah, we had one practice with refs. So he was saying that we ourselves didn't really know how to play the game. It did not feel like that at all. for either side. You know, it was a high level game played by two really high level teams that could have looked equivalent in 2, 3, 4 weeks as to what it did in this one. With respect to the scout, I mean, I don't think it's funny because, again, talking to both coaches after the game, I don't think that the scout was going to be as much about the individual personnel as it was going to be about what they know and what they can assume about the style on the basis of prior games, right? And so, you know, the fact is that these teams played each other last year, and I think that that was going to be the scout that much more informed each team's approach rather than the specific personnel.
Got it. Makes perfect sense. And like I said, you said a couple things that I was sure to take notes of so I didn't forget as you were going through.
I said a lot, so I apologize for the...
That's all right. That was exactly what I wanted. That's why I demanded your presence at whatever time it is, 9:30 at night Tuesday before this goes out on Wednesday.
6:30 Pacific. Not that late.
True.
I mean, I'm not in the Pacific time zone.
No, that's not that relevant to us.
It's not relevant at all. It's just, I'm, you know, like for our Pacific time zone listeners.
It is true, though. Yeah. It is true. First thing you said, Luke Breslin kind of being the, I'll say, guiding light, like a presence of familiarity on the offense. Going into it, I was really excited to get eyes on Quinn Langton in like an official game scenario where he's somebody who through the circuit and through, you know, first class lacrosse with Deemer that has stood out on many different occasions to inside lacrosse staff. But he hasn't quite had that same opportunity at St. Anthony's, just given the number of guys that are, you know, like really some generational talents between Jack Spidell and Owen Duffy that really, you know, just own time ahead of him. What did you see from him, and how did you feel like Breslin kind of brought him along to keep, you know, everybody on the same page?
Yeah, so he's really tall. He's a physical presence. And I think that, like, while I am saying that specifically about him, I think it is also true to say that about St. Anthony's relative to Culver in general, at least when it comes to St. Anthony's defense matching up against Culver's offense. I felt like they had athletic advantages at pretty much all six spots. Not so much true at the other end. Culver very athletic defensively. But, you know, I made this comment to you during the game. I thought that Kyle Bergen, number four, the D-mitty for Culver, was so important for them, even though he was playing either his second or third day of lacrosse after, and he will actually go back and rejoin Culver's hockey team. He's a captain on the hockey team. He just felt like the physical presence that they needed in between the lines against a very athletic team. So point being that Luke Breslin just looked like a, you know, kind of, I don't know how big he is, if I were going to guess, 6'2", 180 pound, pretty muscular, like physical presence who was going to able to withstand, you know, heavy checks from Kyle Eigenbrighton, for example, or Nick Melendez, whoever it was that he either was matched up with or got switched onto, you know, some physical freaks that are going to play really, really high level lacrosse as soon as they are at the Division I level. So point being, physically, I thought he was able to hang. I didn't think that he had the speed or explosiveness to find advantages consistently, but he had the stick protection and the vision and the head upness where it felt like he was always a threat. And that's kind of the point that I'm making. He, you know how Rob, like there are very few players who are better at just going like this. And the gesture I'm making in an audio format is like putting your hands down to say like, slow down, slow down, slow down.
Yeah.
Then Rob Pinnell, he didn't do that, but his presence was similar in the sense that it was like, all right, now is a moment when we're just going to have, they're playing with the shot clock, but he's like, we're just going to have a 60 second possession. There's no reason to take a shot in the first 25 seconds. That's going to be detrimental to what we're trying to accomplish here. And so again, like, you know, you can relate to this, I am sure, just feeling like in a 17 goal game, you were looking down and taking notes like six times when a goal got scored. So I'm not going to come away from this and say that I had like the overwhelming sense for this game relative to what I would have loved to have had. But in my sense of the game, I felt like his impact was way more substantial in terms of making sure that the possessions that they had were not destructive, even if they weren't constructive, meaning that they were neutral And he prevented them from making mistakes, giving them the ball back in dangerous situations, creating transition for them, everything like that.
And honestly, I think that's part of his role. Like, I think he is supposed to be a bit of a calming presence, reliable safety outlet that, you know, will help keep everybody kind of on the same page and just make the right decision for the offense. The other point you made was about Culver's offense and when they're at their best. I've seen them a few times this year, and I do think that they are at their best with the ball in the stick of midfielders to kick things off. I think that they're really good on that high lefty wing with Krogan, where he can kind of initiate and work to get underneath for an upfield shoulder or take topside and kind of sweep across the field. I think if they are in a one goal game, they need one, and they have short time, nothing really to do but put the ball into the stick of one person and let him go, that's going to be Mason Sucic, another midfielder who I think is just, you know, capable of kind of creating offense on the GIF. So I do think that that kind of would be on par with the way that that Culver offense kind of, you know.
And it makes sense that you would want to attack St. Anthony's from the midfield relative than from the attack. But I guess my point was, and I think you saw this, you know, in pivotal moments, you can just watch the highlight package and see it, where it felt like, you know, do these Culver attackmen want to take one more step to get a better angle to get topside? And if the answer is like, when the game's on the line, we're going to throw a BTB to try to win the game. I don't want to overstate it. It just felt like the way in which St. Anthony's defense physically imposed themselves on their opponent made those attackmen less likely to step 1 yard higher above Gili.
In general, I was super impressed with St. Anthony's. There was a draft I did of this week's Q Collar National Top 25 that had St. Anthony's 1. Obviously, since you know, it's released now and they have come in at 3, that has been reduced, but they were obviously really impressive. But to move on and hit Calvert-Hall Hill, which was another game that you had the opportunity to get to, and this one was just a couple hours ago, so is nice and fresh still. How'd that all play out? Biggest takeaways from that one?
So Calvert-Hall jumped out to a 5. Well, okay. Let me start by saying this is one of the best rivalries in high school lacrosse between a team from Baltimore and a team from Ontario, Canada, that didn't have a home field until like 2 years ago. And as far as I know, Calvert-Hall has never actually made the trip to Canada. I remember going to this contest at Homewood Field in, I think it was 2009, which would have been the second time that Hill came to Baltimore. And I remember seeing Zach Palmer rip a 11-yard BTB from the high slot that he ended up doing a bunch of times on that same field. I was sitting next to his mom and grandpa or grandparents when it happened. And I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. So that, yeah, was what, 15 years ago, and they're still playing, and Brody Merrill is still playing. In case you missed the news, he came back and played a game for the San Diego Seals in Calgary last weekend. So he was definitely the sorest coach in high school lacrosse on Tuesday afternoon. But yeah, it was an exciting game. Calvert-Hall got out to a 5-1 lead. Well, so Hill scored first. They went up 1-0, and then Calvert-Hall scored 5 straight. Went up 5-1. Hill just chipped away through the second quarter, and they scored a very, very significant goal with 1 second left on the second quarter clock, right before halftime. And it involved a loose ball in front of the crease. And then Devin Lamprin, who's a lefty, catching the loose ball, carrying behind the net, and then diving with his right hand, wrapping around the crease and scoring, while the player who had gotten hit such that there was a loose ball on the crease was on the ground in front of him. So he effectively like landed on his teammate, and there was a flag down for an illegal body check hit to the head. The goal counted. It made it 6-5 going into halftime. Hill came out with the man up to start the second quarter, or I'm sorry, the third quarter, the second half. If memory serves, they didn't score, and then they scored a man down goal in the third quarter. They scored another man down. They started to separate like toward the end of the third quarter. I think maybe it was 9-7 at the end of the third, and then it was probably like 11-8. No, because they scored late. So, yeah, I guess it was 11-7 midway, or, you know, 4 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. They scored a man down goal. And then they were still man down. And I remarked at this because, you know, they were pressing like 30 yards away from the goal. And they double teamed with a long pole to the blind side. They got the ball on the ground and they tried to run transition up five or up four with 3 minutes to go in a game. It was absolutely hilarious. They went offsides like seven times throughout the game. So it was an incredible performance from the Hill Academy, both in terms of like the bounce back, the resilience, the fact that obviously they needed to get their sea legs, so to speak. They needed to get their field lacrosse legs is probably a more specific way of putting it. Dan, do you know who the most impressive player on the field was?
For Calvert Hall or for Hill or just in general?
In total, in general.
Was it Sisto Averno?
No. He played well. He played it fine. But it was another player who was heading to Jacksonville. It was Hill Academy long stick midi Lucas Frazier. He was outstanding. Outstanding. Just plays all over the field. Really, really impressive. Composed, controlled things. Just an exceptional player. So he was really good. The goalie, Cameron Starrett, was really good for Hill. Actually, I thought both goalies were really good. Calvert Hall's Alex Swartz, again, I don't have stats. I don't know what he finished with. There was one sequence that I really want to see where it was basically a double save. That was really impressive. And then he also had an enormous hit in the second quarter. So his aggressiveness kind of around the cage, outside of the cage, like going out and pressing was something to see. The Calvert Hall goalie was really impressive. And then I guess the other player that I would shout out would be Hayden Hiltz, Owen Hiltz's younger brother. Brody called him their spark plug, kind of their captain, like the guy that does everything for them. And we know what that midfielder looks like. We've seen that guy for Hill Academy in recent years. And it's not hard to imagine how important he is and what he brings to the table.
Yeah, that's a guy that I'm going to be sure to get eyes on, especially with a big one on Friday as Hill has McDonough, who's going to be coming off of a loss.
Angry McDonough team, huh?
Yes, an angry McDonough team that saw a Haverford team that was really hungry and really prepared. I caught that one on stream, so that one was one that I was excited to get eyes on. And Kevin Brown was there, so make sure you are keeping eyes on InsideLacrosse.com for a full recap of that one. Before we move too much farther from this one, though, anybody else from Calvert Hall that you want to shout out? I feel like that was a little heavy on the Hill side.
Yeah, I don't know how much this player gets, but Michael Steer, the midfielder, number 15, he's so fast. He's really quick. I like him a lot. Jermaine Anderson is a junior long stick midi that I know has gotten a lot of attention, but he just wreaks havoc. Right. He can play 110 yards all over the field and he will. Right. Like there, you are not safe anywhere from what he is able to do. And then Owen Scott just, you know, kind of controls the game, knows how to play, makes the right play consistently. And Peyton Forte, the lefty wearing number 45. It's something that we have seen from Calvert Hall for a really long time. Again, like, I don't know that he necessarily distinguished himself as either a shooter or a finisher. But in terms of just being a kind of overall attackman, I came away relatively impressed with him as well.
So I love the Owen Scott shout out. I caught Calvert Hall as well since the last IL Preps podcast. I saw them Friday night with Lawrenceville. Really, really impressed with a few guys, but Owen Scott was definitely one of them. In general, I was impressed with Calvert Hall's athleticism, specifically defensively. All of their guys are, you know, pretty sizable, move well, athletic, definitely draw eyes there. Offensively, Jackson Mitchell, really, really, really another guy that is just a really strong frame, athletic body that is able to get downhill and can really bring it. He can shoot it from range, partially because of that size and athleticism. Owen Scott, High Point, has definitely a good one coming in him. He's really, really just like poised, composed, savvy. It felt like every time Calvert Hall needed to play, he had something that he could go to, whether it was an inside roll to a dive or just getting down the alley. His versatility was really impressive. There's not a spot on the field that he can't attack his matchup and be successful. So I really love that Owen Scott shout out. And then in general, Calvert Hall just always had an answer. There were a bunch of different times where you thought Lawrenceville would kind of start to run away with it, whether it was a 2-3-4 goal lead or a little bit of a run, just some momentum building in their favor. And then boom, Calvert Hall would answer with a run of their own, or at least just like a big play to kind of stop that momentum in its tracks.
Well, and I think to that point, I came away really impressed with the faceoff battle in both ways. Ben Cuomo definitely had the advantage early for Calvert Hall. And then Nicholas Belamonte, so Cuomo going to Yale, Belamonte going to High Point, like Scott, you mentioned, the faceoff guy for Hill Academy, really kind of responded, rebounded, found his rhythm in the second half. So the faceoff battle was particularly interesting. And then one other player for Calvert Hall offensively that stood out to me, Preston Huffman, made a couple of nice plays. So yeah, I mean, they're deep and they're talented. I don't think that they necessarily have the alpha that they have had in years past. That individual, that singular, into like kind of the true Sunderland that everything revolves around. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, you need to expect them to grow and progress as the season goes along. They're always one of the best coach teams in high school lacrosse. And, you know, there's no question that they're going to win a game that you don't expect them to win. And it hasn't come yet, but they have plenty more opportunities ahead.
And you mentioned a young guy. I'm going to do the same thing here for Lawrenceville, and I'm going to turn some attention to Hanson Peck. Left-handed attackman for Lawrenceville that really, really shined in that game. I think going into it, everybody knew that he's a skilled player. I think everyone knew that, like, if the ball goes into his stick and his hands are free, it's going to end up in the back of the goal as the next step. I don't know that everybody knew how good of a feeder he is. He was the guy that they would set up on EMO as carrying. He was, like, feeding their seal slips. He was set up in a position to be really successful in that role, but you don't get put into that role without that being like a really strong piece of your skill set at Lawrenceville. And I thought that was particularly notable about his game. Defensively, I thought the best player on the field was Harrison Vassell, headed to Lehigh. He's long, he's athletic, he's mean, he has like a real soundness to his technique on ball. But he also has a really, really solid stick. And that shows in a big way at the end of a quarter where those two connect right at the end of the buzzer. And so shout out Dan Abern again. He has the perfect angle. So make sure you go and find the sideline highlights of that one. But it's the perfect angle right from Peck's back where you can see all the way through the defense down to the righty pipe where Vassell is just like hanging out. And it's a really, really good visual of that feed and Vassell's stick skills to just kind of round out his game.
Wow. That's a heavy, heavy analysis, Dan.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Try to pack that as much as I possibly can. All right. Anything else from those two games that you had, or you think we're ready to let the people get on to Coach Noble and Coach McCready's?
We went about twice as long as we were planning to, so I think it's time to let them get on to the main events, the folks that they actually showed up here for.
Perfect. Let's do it. Boom. Welcome back, IL Preps Nation. We have another really special interview here. Head coach Jeremy Noble of the Valor Christian program. Coach, how are you?
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Thanks so much for joining me. I know there was a lot going on, and out west, you guys actually have some weather that you're still dealing with, huh?
Man, we got in all different areas, but right at Valor, we got about, man, 18 to 20 inches of snow.
Yeah.
And it was tough because it kind of ended up freezing the night and the ground was frozen and then it stopped and then it snowed again. So that's Colorado for you, because now I'm looking outside my window and it's 60 degrees and couldn't be nicer out. But it is what it is. And we're kind of used to it. And we're also used to it melting pretty quick.
Yeah, hopefully that good weather comes by and, you know, wipes the slate clean. You guys can get on out there without any too much trouble. Is that what had led to Friday's Cherry Creek cancellation?
Yeah, it got canceled because of that, because school was canceled Thursday and Friday. So even if we wanted to try to get the game in Friday. If school's canceled, like you can't do it. So essentially we were going to play Friday and I was going to give them Saturday, Sunday, Monday off for like their spring break. And unfortunately with that being canceled, they already had Thursday, Friday off. So I had them on the turf walking and running around and opening up and breaking the ice down to get the sun on there to melt. So that's how our boys spent their first day of spring break yesterday, was making sure we're able to get on the field today. So I'm proud of them for doing that. They didn't have to. That's probably not how they wanted to spend their last day of spring break, but they all came together. There was parents out there. There were siblings out there. So I'm really excited for us to get the opportunity to practice the next 3 days before Philadelphia.
And that feels like a really good segue into an element that, as I'm learning and doing more of these types of conversations and interviews, like so many times, not some 100% of these conversations, a coach has brought up like the community in their area. Brothers, everybody's serving it.
Yeah, it's great. Like, especially we had a bunch of our JV kids out yesterday that are on spring break for this full week. Like they came out to help, and it's just an awesome culture that we've been building here at Valor. And days like yesterday show exactly that.
And so how long have you been at the helm at Valor? And what was that like takeover kind of process to you?
So I was offensive coordinator for 2 years, and this is my second year going into my head coach here. So it was a good transition. I was the offensive coordinator, and that's something I really, really enjoyed. We had a special group of seniors my first year. It was good because I was coming from coaching at DU as a volunteer assistant under Coach Tierney and working with Coach Brown and Coach Orson. So it was a good change, but it was also a hard change where you have to continue to remind yourself that going from college coaching to high school coaching, there you have to be a little bit more simple in everything you do in your game planning on offense, but also as a full team. So the transition was good. Coach Hoffman was running the defense and the head coach, and then being the head coach here has been something that's really, really exciting. And I love being a head coach, and I love being a high school head coach. And the transition was easy, but I also like to thank Coach Tierney, Coach Brown, Brody and Patrick Merrill from the Hill Academy. Like, I'm in this position today because I've been mentored by so many good people in society, but also in the lacrosse world.
You mentioned the Hill and Brody. I'm actually going to see them today, so I'm quite excited for that. That'll be a good one as well.
How about him making a comeback and coming out of retirement? Like, I was actually just this past week, because I'm full-time here and the boys are always coming to my office, so we were actually watching the SEALs documentary of War on the Floor, and I was telling some of our juniors and our seniors how amazing Brody is as a leader and one of the best leaders I've ever been around. And for him to have coached me in high school and then having played with him on the world teams in 2014 in Denver when we won and we lost in 18, but then also playing on the SEALs together and him being the captain, but also Patrick being the head coach, it like all came full circle. And it was just what a coincidence and a unique experience. And for Brody to actually come back, and I was just telling him how good Brody was, and sure enough, on Saturday, it's like he's back, and I'm like, wow.
Did you see it coming?
I didn't see it coming, but what I will say is it doesn't shock me.
Right, right.
I mean, like I said, like just adding his leadership to the locker room and his experience and his IQ is invaluable, and like he can still play the game at the highest level. So it doesn't shock me. It doesn't surprise me. He got the itch to come back, and honestly, like I think he could continue to play after this season. I don't think it's like he could just stop after the season. Like, he is such a good athlete, player. He's so smart where he's able to change his game from what he used to be to still be effective, but just in a different way now.
they should sign him to a lifetime playoff contract. Like anytime we get to playoffs, it's just you're back on the squad. We'll use you for whatever you can give us. Bring us to the promised land.
Man, that I mean, it's a great idea. And like, if there's someone I always want in my corner come playoff time, it's the Merrills.
No doubt. And you guys, this Valor team, have quite the stretch of opponents here coming up as well. There's a lot of good lacrosse going on, high school-wise, NLL-wise, college Division I-wise, Division III-wise. Everywhere you go, you constantly come back to guys from Colorado, which is a sentiment that, you know, maybe is more budding than previously, but I feel like is one that is 100% apparent. It was just apparent even for me this weekend on the CNU Dickinson call, getting to shout out Arapaho and Fred Fulkerson, who's a guy that's played in a lot of Inside the Cross events. But you guys have quite the crew as well that's prepared to go on and move from Valor into prominent college positions. I think one guy that I really want to start with is in goal, in Buck Cunningham, who for me, and I use this expression a lot, but it's good. I think it fits. If I was to Madden rate your team, like the highest overall player would probably end up being in goal in Buck Cunningham. What does he bring to your team? And do you agree with that statement?
Yeah. I mean, it's emotional thinking about that young man right now. His growth as not just a goalie, but as a sibling. He has his two younger brothers that he obviously mentors. He started on our JV team, moving from Seattle to Colorado, and has worked his way up, where it's crazy to think the first time he had started a high school game for us here at Valor, he was already committed to Duke. He is just an exceptional young man in representation of our program. The best thing that I mean, there's so many qualities I love about him, but he's just himself. He's a leader. He's vocal. He likes to come out of the cage. He makes every save he should make. And then he also is stealing saves. He's always positive. He has that intensity that you need as a goalie to lead the defense and holding them accountable. He actually outscored some of our offensive players last year, where I think he had 2 goals or 3 assists maybe for him. But like, here's the story about Buck is like, we were getting ready to play Cherry Creek last year, and we knew they were going to 10-man ride us. And so we had worked on going against it in practice, and we're like, hey, be ready for a sniper call for our goalie, but also mostly for our close D guys if we felt like we could throw it. And myself and my assistant coach Brian Wagner caught him just practicing for hours after practice, just shooting. And like, first play of the game, defensive stop, makes a save, starts coming up, boom, shoots it, goes down, doesn't even bounce once, goes right in the net. But no one works harder than him. But also, he's overcome a lot of adversity. He, at NHSLS this fall, he was clearing the ball out of the cage against, unfortunately, I think it was the Hill Academy, and he went down. And it was like he had been like shot. And so my assistant and I run on the field, and he's like my leg, my foot, like I felt a pop, and I'm like, oh man, like I started thinking Achilles, but it was actually Liz Frank. So he had been out since then, and he actually just got cleared this week. Like what a miracle. And he's been in the cage, and we're excited to start getting him reps and throwing him back on the field, because he's a really big part of this team, and to have him back and just on the field in practice, and to be able to play him this upcoming weekend is so special for me. But I also, it's really, really exciting for him being a senior and really enjoying his last 2 or 3 months here before he heads off to Duke.
Absolutely. And that is those both factors of that story, both him coming back, but also like last year, drilling the 10 man on the first shot after shooting for hours. That is incredible. And certainly the type of kid that moving forward, hopefully IL Preps listeners will be rooting for, keeping a special ear out for as they continue.
He's a gamer, man. And it's funny, like with him as well, like I had the opportunity and luxury to coach Alex Reddy when I was at Denver, and he was a lefty, and what a killer he was at DU, and it was awesome. And it's funny to see Alex now at Duke as one of their coaches and goalie coach, and Buck going to Duke now as a lefty, and I can see them being very similar type goalies. I'm really, really excited for him to get there and work with Alex.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect pair there to go and get him up to date. And Duke has quite the goalie room right this second as well, with a freshman starting over a senior that led them to the national championship the previous year. So a room that, you know, he'll certainly be joining and will immediately make better as well.
Yeah, man, he works, like, and if there's one thing I know, like, he'll work for everything he gets, and he'll be a great teammate, and he'll go earn whatever is to come for him.
And to shift gears here, you have a few guys that are also headed to play at locations within Colorado, which is also really cool, with Liam Goodwood headed to Colorado College, Blake Kersky headed to Denver, Alexander Rismondi to Air Force. And I apologize if I'm missing any, that's just who I have off in my notes. But what's it like to kind of have those guys obviously come up and prepare through the system, but then also stay in Colorado?
Yeah, it's really, really cool to be able to do that. We actually have a player that was at Valor one of my first year here. And it's exciting for me because Trey Digby was part of like my first class here at Valor. And with that, it's cool to see Kersky be able to go be a defensive player next year there and do the exact same thing. And one thing I know about Kersky is like, he's going to have an opportunity to contribute right away. Obviously right now their defense at Denver is pretty stout. And myself and Coach Brian Wagner, who I played with at DU and coached with at DU, who's our defensive coordinator here, like we went and watched a couple practices and looking how Coach Gallant has done with their defense, especially the older guys. And he's done a terrific job, but also knowing they're going to be losing a bunch of guys and having Blake come in next year, like I truly think he can contribute. And I also start looking at like Liam Goodwin at Colorado College, like what a perfect fit. That kid has grown. One thing that I love seeing with our high school kids, they come in as freshmen and they're so awkward and small, and they start to go through changes and grow up and mature. And to see Liam grow up as a big, strong lefty attackman that is really versatile. And then I look at Alex Rismondi, who's going to Air Force, which can't say enough good things about all of these kids and Alex and his family. But to be able to go up the highway here to Colorado Springs and be able to watch Alex play, like he is a great offensive midfielder, but he can do everything. He can play defense. He can be on wings on faceoffs. He can be on last minute offense, last minute defense, man down. He can do everything. And I just think all of these guys continue to push each other because that's how they've gotten so much, much better. So it's really important to continue to have guys and really cool to have guys stay in Colorado. And we look to hopefully continue to do that in the future, because there's nothing more than I want to be able to go watch those guys on Saturdays and Sundays all around the state, just compete at the highest level.
So you mentioned Liam's growth, and there's obviously more guys that like I want to pick at, but I'll expand on that a little bit. You guys have like a very specific weight regimen? Do you guys have like a really like strict off-season program that you have them a part of, or is that more like Liam's on his own and just wanted to be better, so he did it?
Man, we do different things differently here at Valor. And ever since I got here, we started to do things a little bit differently. And the way I kind of like to do things here is like really preparing them for the next level for college lacrosse. And it's understanding the basics that's played at every single level the right way, with movement off ball, you know, and dodging and transition and dodging angles and feeding concepts. So like for me, it's not just me. Like we have an awesome staff of Coach Bill Fuse, that was way a while ago at Middlebury. Coach Brian Wagner was at DU. We have Riley DeSmit that actually played under Petro at Hopkins. So we're able to develop these kids because we've had the positive experience of playing at that next level. But I also have to give credit to the kids because they're listening to what we're showing them and telling them to do. And with how many good offensive players that we have that are young guys, but also committed guys, but also on the D end, the best way for us to continue to get better is for our offense to practice against our defense and shooting against Buck and our young goalie, Ian. So I have to give credit to my staff. I think they do a really good job of developing these guys, but I also have to give credit to all of the players in our program where they're competing so hard against each other and they've learned and they know the game to play it the right way, where they're continually just getting better and better, man.
Absolutely. And like I said, there were more guys that I wanted to pick right back at, so I'm going to shift right back into it. A pair of guys headed to High Point in Luke Allred and Blake Benton. What do those guys bring to the table? I know for me, like looking at them and their like highlight tapes, I think really important aspect of high school lacrosse is like dominating the middle of the field. And those are two guys that are just going to, you know, help that. So what does that kind of, you know, bring to the table for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Coach Torpy was actually the one that was recruited me to DU on my visit and toured my family around DU when Coach Brown was still there and Jamie Monroe was there. So I actually committed on my visit in the office with Coach Monroe and Torpy. And unfortunately, I never got the chance to play for Coach, but I'm really, really excited for my guys to play for him here at Valor. And he's got a pair of studs coming in there. And I look at both of their paths, but I also look at all of our senior paths. Like Luke Allred was on our JV team. Blake Benton started on our JV team for 2 years as an attackman. And then last year he played attack for us all the way up until the first week of the season, and we really needed him on defensive midfield. And he said, Coach, I'll do whatever it takes to help our team win. And he embraced that position as an SSDM. And then he committed to High Point.
I thought I had the wrong guy for a second.
No, man. It's like these kids have just grown so much, and they've all had their own different paths and challenges. But to see where they've come from as freshmen to now, it just shows to the work that they've put in, the belief that they've had in themselves and doing whatever it takes. And so with Luke, man, I think he's the best defenseman in the state, probably one of the best in the country. He's just not like recognized enough because us being from Colorado, but I get to see him on a daily basis. And same with Blake. It's like, I've played against the best players in the world for the last 10 years before I stepped back from playing, and like I see what these kids are doing right now, and I look at Luke, and like there's no doubt in my mind he's going to have a significant impact with all of our guys as soon as they get to college. And that's my goal, is like I want to get them committed and help them get to the next level. And but then like once they make that commitment, it's like, what can I do as a coach now to make sure they're not just going there, but they're ready to have an impact when they step onto campus day one?
And how often when you have that conversation with players, is the answer something that's like, you know, really specific to them? Or is it more like, you know, sort of a generic, like, I want to be great, I want to be more athletic? Or is it like, you know, I'm a lefty shooter, I need to become a better, like, more well-rounded player?
Yeah, I think for me, I think a lot of it comes from I've earned the kids know I love them. And they know I respect them and I believe in them, which helps me to be able to push them on the field, but also for them to trust me when I'm making recommendations of different things. So I think the first thing that has to happen before the mentality of like, Coach, I'll do whatever you ask, is like you have to earn the respect and you have to show them that you care about them and what's best for them. And then ultimately we've gone from that to our seniors have done a really good job at, it's a player-led culture, and it just kind of starts trickling through the rest of the program. But they're always wanting to get better. They have, our seniors right now have a bunch of off periods during the week, and they're always coming into my office to watch film, to go do some indie work out on the field, and they take the challenge upon themselves, and they're never comfortable. And that's really, really cool to see as a coach. And it also motivates me as a coach to continue to work hard for them, and even harder in the future, but also to make sure I'm prepared for the questions they have for me, so I'll have answers.
And we still have two more guys, very specifically, like my favorite two players from your team outside of Buck, which I guess I can say. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I am what I am. But that's Baden Brown and Rush LaSalle. And yeah. Baden going to Tufts, watching him at NHSLS, like he was just so savvy and poised with the ball on his stick. Like you can just tell that he's going to have a really like illustrious career and a ton of points for the Jumbos. What about his game kind of pops to you?
I mean, there's just so many really, really cool, unique things about B that we love as a coaching staff and the team loves about him. I still remember he broke his arm his freshman year. And so I didn't even know who he was until we started to have tryouts in late winter. And he was this small little quirky freshman, but I'm like, man, this kid can play. And he's maybe 90 pounds. And I think I could see a lot of myself in him. And I was like, this kid's going to make varsity as a freshman. And sure enough, he ended up making varsity as a freshman, but he started. And he's the type of player where like I can tell him, this is what the defense is doing. This is what your defender's doing. This is what's going to be open. And he's like, boom, I got it. Like his lacrosse IQ is very, very high in the understanding of the game, which I think really helped him when he was a freshman and sophomore to be successful. I also think he plays with a really big edge. And I think he's had a lot of doubters in the past, whether it's from players in Colorado, but also maybe he feels like he got under recruited a little bit. And so when he plays with that fire that you just can't teach. And I think when he plays, you can see that. And they have such a special player that can really do anything. He can score. Like he had 96 points last year. And he broke Gunnar Fellows, who's a sophomore at Army and starting since a freshman, who I was lucky enough to coach, and Lance Tillman. He broke both of their records last year. And last year was his first year ever playing attack. So he's just so versatile. He plays hard. I can put him on. If I need a ground ball, he's on the wing. He can play defense. He can quarterback the offense. It's almost like having another coach out there. And like I said, I just see a lot of myself in him and just really proud of him. And also like, he's one of the smartest kids in the school. Just can't say enough good things about him. And every kid's recruiting process is different, but I truly believe like he has an awesome home there that he's going to be able to contribute right away. And he's a big part of what we do. And he's definitely continuing to make our team better. And we just couldn't be more proud of him.
Yeah, he is. I mean, his game is just so like tailor-made to go play at Tufts to me. For specifically what you said with the versatility, like there's not a spot on the field that he's going to be even slightly uncomfortable making a play from. And I think that'll fit right in with the Jumbos. Okay. And then another guy that has a great fit ahead of him in my eyes is Rush LaSalle, who midfielder is going to Army, have to do a million things at the high school level. And I think he fits right into that as well.
Yep, they got a good one in Rush, man. He's always known since day one he wanted to go to an academy and to go play for Coach Ward on as the offensive coordinator. It's just a perfect fit. He's continuing to develop more and more with both of his hands, his feeding, his shooting. He's always the one where if you drive by the field on a Sunday, you probably catch Rush out on the field with his younger brother Torin shooting. He plays hard. He's grown as a player, but also he's really become a quiet leader, not with his voice, but with his actions, but also me catching him working with younger guys when I don't necessarily always know that, but like he's out there shooting with some of our younger guys or helping them or mentoring them. So he's just done such a good job as a leader and a player. And it's a perfect fit for him at Army. I there's no doubt in my mind once he gets there, he can contribute right away. And the coaching style from us here to there is really going to help it be like a seamless transition. And Coach Ward and I have a good relationship and we're always in communication, and to have Gunner there right now having an impact, there's no doubt that Rush is going to be doing exactly what Gunner's doing, but just in the midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned these younger guys and him kind of molding some and, you know, helping bring them along. One guy that, like, I've used the term pops like way too much, but this guy really pops. And that is JT Cross, a 2027 attackman. What should like high school fans expect from him for this season? Is he on varsity, like starting? Like, what are, you know, kind of the expectations for him on a really talented team, knowing that he is also talented, but just one of the younger of the group?
Man, just an awesome, humble, grateful young kid. I think when someone gets the attention like JT has, people can create different narratives about what this person's like. But one thing I can tell you, like, he doesn't read into social media whether people are saying good or bad things about him. There's hype around him, but it's warranted. He's another one of those kids that he's always shooting, he's always working. I'm just really excited to watch him grow over the next 4 years, but also for this year. Like, our message to JT is like, just because you're a freshman, like, don't wait to make plays like a senior. Like, just dive in. And if you make mistakes, I have your back as a coach. Your teammates have your back as a coach. So he can just add such another really awesome dimension to our offense. His change of direction is unreal. His vision and his shooting, like, he can kind of do it all. So to be able to be able, like, integrate him into our offense with Liam and Baden and Alex and Rush and some of our younger offensive players, like, it's going to be super easy, and he's going to have a significant impact right away. But also, like, we just got our hands on him starting last week. He actually just won a state championship with our varsity basketball program as a freshman. So our basketball program is had an awesome season. So, like, he fortunately had that opportunity where he hasn't been with us as much as we'd like.
A double-edged sword.
Man, like, for him to have that opportunity as a freshman to win a state championship in basketball, I actually think the lessons that he's learned through basketball is really going to help him on the field. And with him being back with us, it's like riding a bike. It's been great. So just really proud of his whole freshman year so far, and just really excited to see him grow this year, and also for our older guys to help him grow as a player, both with the ball, without the ball, and kind of the passing of the torch to him. And like I said, we just have such an awesome senior class, man, that is really helping our younger guys. And I think with that, it's like, it helps guys like JT and Noah Pacheco and James Riches and a bunch of our sophomores that are, they're really, really good players, man.
And I mean, everything you said there feels like you hit the nail on the head, but just to reiterate what I've seen, and this is very specifically from an HSLS, but I thought he was like a true quarterback at X when he was back there. And the point that you made, just his vision and feeding. I thought that every time the ball got kicked to X, he like catches it with his stick up, his head up, his eyes up, and he's reading the field. But more importantly, like, he understands his reads as the ball is coming into his stick. You know, it's like a quick look inside. He's looking through. He'll skip it. He'll look away. Like, he does all the type of stuff that, you know, seniors do while they're playing that X role that I think.
Yeah. I think as well, like, it's, I've only had the opportunity to really like get my hands on and coach him here at Valor since the fall. So like his 27 Kings team that he plays for, his dad coaches that. So his dad has done a really good job with JT in helping him develop, who actually, his dad actually played at Notre Dame. A while ago. So Ray has done a good job in helping his son develop in that whole age group. And I think with JT, it's like, he's going out there as a freshman, and he's at NHSLS getting covered by some of the best defensemen in the country, and he doesn't look out of place. And it's just been really, really cool to see that. And I also, like, we have all of our offensive sets and our plays on Lacrosse Labs. And last night I looked, because I can see who's viewed it, how many times, and when. He's the one that has the most views. He's gone over everything the most. And to me, that shows with him and a couple other our younger guys like him, like they're looking at all this stuff because like they're soaking it all in and they're students of the game. So just awesome young kids. I know our senior class, rightfully so, deserves a lot of credit, but they've done a really good job helping our freshman and sophomore class really grow and develop. And everyone is equal. Everyone is one. There's no, well, just because you're a freshman, this is how things are. It's like we are a family and a brotherhood and a team. And these seniors that leave, when our guys have success in the future, they're going to have a part of that, even though they're not actually here, because of what they've done for our younger guys to help them with their mentorship and leadership and growth and how we do things here.
Awesome. I love that answer. And like I said, really, really, you know, going to be keeping a close eye on JT. And then his teammate, also another 2027, and you may have to help me with the pronunciation on his last name, James Riches.
Yep. Yeah. God. I mean, sports beast, everyone calls him. But okay. He has this quick twitch where it's a God-given ability. Like he just has this jam that he catches your eye as soon as you see him on the field. Whether that's his long hair, I actually don't think it's that. I think it's just the way he plays and how fast he plays the game. And he's another player that can take wings. He'll play man down. He can play man up. He can play offensive midfield reps. He's someone that we're so excited for the future of him. And once again, another really, really humble, quiet kid and an awesome family. That's just been such a pleasure to have here. And on a side note, like I want to make sure I talk quickly about our two face-off guys.
Yeah, of course.
We got Gage Bachman, who's a senior going to Queens. And then we actually have a junior, Harry Luong, who's going to Harvard. Those two guys have been awesome for us this fall at NHSLS. And to continue to help them grow as players and to see where they're about to go is really, really exciting as a coach. And as you know, if you're not winning faceoffs, like it can be really tough. But the way we've been able to coach them in transition, with having set plays and be able to get the other faceoff guys stuck on, but also be able to leave them on offense, has been really cool to coach because of how good they are at the faceoff. So it's just really fun coming to work every single day and preparing every day, knowing we've learned the basics the right way. Now we can start teaching them that next level of IQ and lacrosse for all of our kids that they do at college lacrosse.
And let's expand on that a little bit, because one thing that I think is really interesting within the Colorado community is in some of the, you know, I won't say non-hotbed areas, but just the less known areas. You know, like if you go stand in the right spot on Long Island and throw a rock in any direction, you might hit a face-off kid going Division I lacrosse. You know, same thing in Baltimore or yep. in certain spots. What's the face-off community like in, you know, Colorado? How are guys, you know, hitting that iron sharpens iron thing to make sure everybody's getting better?
Yeah, I think it's a small knit community of face-off guys. I think they do a really good job of teaching the younger guys. I look at Harry, for example. He's working with a ton of youth kids in all different club programs. He does stuff with our Kings program where, like, it just shows to me he doesn't play lacrosse because he's good at it. He plays because he loves the game and he's giving back what he's learned. Joe Nardella has been a really big mentor to Harry, and I can see Joe's game in coming into Harry's game, and you can kind of see the similarities. But like what Joe's done for Harry, I can see Harry doing for a lot of our younger kids right now, and Gage as well with his younger brother that's a freshman here at Valor. But they're always doing face-off work with all kids around the state on Sundays, I think. They're always helping each other. So just to see that aspect of the game grow in our state, not just here at Valor, but at other high schools, has been really cool. And yeah, when you get to the face-off X, there's no friends, even if you're your boys with the other guy, but there's definitely a mutual respect between those guys, and just couldn't be more proud of those two. And especially with Harry going to Harvard, he's our first ever Valor Christian High School student be able to go to Harvard, not just athletics. So just really proud of the hard work. And once again, he's another kid that has earned everything that he's got. But I also remember there was a face-off guy that I played with at DU, Chase Carrero, who myself and Cam Flint would take the wings and Chase would take the face-off. And we were actually like our first line midfield, and we would just play. Harry and Gage have adopted that offensive mindset where I can lead them on offense, and they'll play with how hard they've worked on their skills. So it's been fun to help them grow their game, not just as face-off guys, but as complete offense and defensive players.
Awesome. And there's obviously a long road ahead for your guys in terms of the entire bulk of the season. But yeah, on the cusp here is a trip out east where fortunately we'll get to connect. But also you'll play Academy of the New Church and Malvern Prep. What to you, you know, are you excited about for this trip? And how did these matchups kind of come together?
Well, I'm always trying to push our players and challenge them. And I look at last year on spring break, we had the opportunity, we played, it was Foothills, Cathedral Catholic, La Costa Canyon, and it was great. We played three games in 4 days and was fortunately to win all those games by four or five goals. And those are some pretty well-respected and talented teams. So for me, when I got back here this fall, I'm like, how can I make it more challenging for our players? And to be able to have the relationship with Matt McCreadys, who I have the most utmost respect for as a coach and what he's done at Malvern, but as a player at Penn State, but also playing with him professionally at Atlanta, and my brother playing with him, like just an awesome, awesome dude. So fortunately enough for me, having a connection with Matt as a player, when I reached out to him, and we kind of talked about Valor, and he had heard about our program, it was a no-brainer for him, and he was really welcoming and added us to his schedule, where I look at his schedule and like what a gauntlet he has, and like that's where I would love to get to a point where we have five or six games out of state in the coming years that are similar to his. So he obviously, like, he without a hesitation he added us in, and I just kind of asked him like, who's another really, really tough opponent that we can play right around you? And to be able to add Academy of the New Church, like, was awesome. So for our guys, they're flying out on Friday. They're playing Academy on Saturday, and then they're playing Malvern on Monday, and then they fly home. So it's going to be challenging, but also, man, like, the reason we're going to play these teams is because, like, I believe in my guys. Like, we're not going there just to play them. Like, we don't know what's going to happen in those games, but like, my guys have earned the opportunity the last couple of years with me to get this opportunity to go play these teams. And I'm not just giving them the opportunity. Like, they've earned it. And like, I believe that they're going to go have fun and represent our state and our school really, really well. So I'm just excited for the opportunity. I'm thankful for the Philadelphia schools, but I'm also just really proud of our program because they've earned this opportunity for spring break.
And it will definitely be a really exciting trip. Have you had the chance, and I don't know how much you want to tilt your hat, because this will come out before that game actually happens, but what have you kind of prepared your team for as you prepare to see specifically Malvern, but just in general this weekend?
I think a couple different things. I think one, the shot clock, adding that in, which we don't play with in Colorado, is unique.
Yep.
I necessarily, for me, I don't think the 90 seconds is an issue. It's just making sure we are prepared in situations on offense and defense. When you start getting down to like the 10, 15 yep. seconds left in a shot clock, of how you want to do things.
Defensively, which everybody yeah. kind of thinks about it as an offensive thing,
yep.
but defending the final 10 seconds of a shot clock with the like urgency that increases in those mm-hmm. moments is definitely a bit different.
Yeah. So it's just starting to prepare them like that. It's we're going to be focusing on what we do as a team and in our systems, we're not going to change because we're going to play these teams, or we're not going to change because there's a shot clock. We're just going to be ourselves. There's also some pretty talented dudes on both of those teams where we got a tough challenge with both of them, but like, we're just focusing on Saturday. And then once we get through Saturday, the players then start focusing on Monday. So right now it's just continue to preach to them to be present in the moment, watch a little bit of film on ourselves, watch a little bit of film on them. Coach Wagner and I actually had the experience where we were able to go down to DU probably before they played Cornell. And we sat down with Coach Brown for about 40 minutes, and we were able to pick his brain on this coming weekend for ideas for preparation, but also just in general. So like the resources we have from the University of Denver, where Brownie's been such a good mentor to me, in my playing career and coaching career, like we're able to pick his brain, and he gave us some good kind of concepts or ideas where he's like, you got to look for this when there's a shot clock and stuff like that. So, they'll be prepared. We're just focusing on day to day and like, what can we do to get better today as an individual, as a group, and just stacking those days on each other.
Awesome. Well, I think this has been fantastic. I'm really excited to get out to that game on Monday. I will definitely be getting to that Valor-Malvern game. Unfortunately, I'll miss the ANC game, but certainly excited to catch your guys in action. Anything else that you want to leave the listeners of the IL Preps podcast with?
Just really proud of the sport of lacrosse overall. All of the players in the state are doing such a good job. There's so many good players in our state, but also a lot of really good coaches helping grow the game in our state. So I just think the best is yet to come for not just Valor Christian High School, but for the state of lacrosse in Colorado. I'm not going to be there this weekend. My wife is expecting any day now.
Congratulations. That makes two of us.
Yeah, so she's been a trooper, and she's been a rock and such a solid supporter for me and my whole playing and coaching career. So I'm going to be staying back, and we're on baby watch for our baby boy. That's going to be a future left attackman. But I know our guys. They're going to play. Like, I'm a coach, but honestly, I have so much trust and faith in our assistants and our players, especially being so senior heavy. Like, I'm just looking forward for that opportunity. And so essentially my games for Malvern Prep and Academy are not on Saturday and Monday. They were yesterday. It's today, it's Wednesday and Thursday, and helping prepare them and then just sitting back and watching and believing them and just really proud of them, man. So things are a little bit different here, but really, really excited just for my whole future here at Valor and with my wife. It's just really an exciting time, man.
It certainly is. It's exciting times for everybody. We really appreciate you taking some time during all those exciting times and, you know, so much of the hecticness that's going on right now and getting with us for the IL Preps podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. You guys are doing awesome. I appreciate the whole Inside Lacrosse crew.
All right, IL Preps Nation, thanks so much for tuning in here. We have an awesome interview in store as part of a really, really great episode. With me right now is Coach Matt McCreadys of the Malvern Prep Program. Coach, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me. I know it's quite the busy time here in early March, but especially today on a game day, you have the Dons from Loyola rolling in. Without asking you to tilt your cap too much, which actually you can tilt it as much as you'd like, because by the time people are listening to this, that game will have already been played. So what's the scout on the Dons? What are the Friars prepared to take away?
They're a really quality program, have been for a long time. I was excited to get them on the schedule. As you may know, their head coach, Will Hawes, was one of our assistant coaches last year, a guy that I've had a relationship with in the lacrosse world for quite some time now, both professionally and obviously in the coaching ranks in the high school level. So we're excited to have them up. They have some quality talent on both sides of the ball. Number 14 for them is a very good player on their offensive side. And we're looking forward to playing them. We're looking forward to hosting them on our first home game of the season, a night game that is not too customary here at Malvern, and definitely excited to have them on campus.
Yep, and 14 is Mason Cook, who is a Loyola Greyhound-bound player from Loyola Blakefield that if I were you, I would also have right at the top of that stat. He's been quite the player for them so far this season.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, he's up there for us. We have our eyes on him.
And I guess that's a really good spot to start is your defensive side of the ball, where you guys have quite a few standouts. For you, so far this season, who are a few guys that have maybe really stood out at this point?
Yeah, I think we are a veteran team on that side of the ball. You know, it starts in Cage. We have a quality goalie in Heath Jones as a junior. He's committed to Rutgers. And we have a few quality backups as well, a younger guy and some seniors. But our close defense and Kyle Warsnup, Jack Lehman, Brad Piffath, those guys are animals. You know, going to Rutgers, going to Ohio State and Penn State, Big Ten force down at the back there. And obviously our rope unit is, you know, I won't say second to none, but they are the heartbeat of our program. And the Bartolomeo brothers, Will Tantillo, Brendan Krause, Eric Macmillan, and the list goes on with these guys. And then we have a junior pole in Jack Carroll, who's been with our program for 2+ years now. And again, there's other guys. It just goes down a list where they're all providing stout efforts. What never changes with this group is their relentless energy on the field. And obviously, in most of them being seniors and juniors, they have the communication element and all the chemistry that they developed over their time here at Malvern Prep.
And I appreciate your modesty, so I will go ahead and actually just say it. I do think you guys have the best short stick D mid room in the country at the high school level. I would argue potentially that it's not even really that close. Where does that come from? Those guys are all just like tough, gritty, but on top of that, like, they're really technical. They cover long dodges well. They have good approaches on their short dodges. Like, yep. They're just really sound all around. Where does that come from?
Yeah, it comes from the mentality and the coaching of our defensive coordinator and Paul O'Grady, who's been our defensive coordinator for some years now, has had a few hiatus and going to other programs like Haverford School, and we're his alma mater. But he really sets the tone for our defensive unit. He also is just, you know, mentally a guy that gets our guys in a good headspace before the game, technically sound, but more so than anything, they're just gritty players. And that's kind of what we preach on that side of the ball. We're a unit. And we like to say that our guys just go out there and try to win every matchup that they have in an individual setting, as to stand up for the brother that's standing next to him.
And you mentioned brothers, which is, again, a very timely segue here. You have a trio of them in the DiBartolomeo brothers that, like, they all just feed off of each other, it seems, and they all have, like, a similar style that they bring to the table. Have you ever had a trio like that ever before? And, like, how
I don't think so. I really don't think so. It starts with Luca. I'm going to shut this door real quick.
No problem. No worries. This is the inside background scoop that the IL Preps listeners get out of the IL Preps pod. You know, coaches just finishing up lunch duty and getting with me here in the middle
That's
of the
right.
day on a game day and selling t-shirts. So
yeah, no, we have a big game today. Actually, that's a tie into Luca, right? So Luca, the Bartolomeo, a senior captain for us this year, and our long pole, a part of that trio of brothers that you've mentioned, in Perry and Roman as well. Luca's a cancer survivor, and you know, this is a very pivotal game for us with regard to bringing awareness to coaches versus cancer. So we're proud to do that. But just to touch on the Bartolomeo brothers, they are, like I said, the defense is the heartbeat. The defensive midfield rope unit are the heartbeat of our program. And it's those guys, those three specifically, are our engine. You know, how they go, we go. And they usually go. I mean, they're usually 100%, 150%. I've used this term a lot early on in the season. And it's from a book from a great, all-time great Eagles player, and Brian Dawkins. But I like to call them pullback players. They are guys that you have to tell them to slow down because they just don't know how to not go full speed, which is exactly what you want in the mentality of a defensive player. And again, they're mean, but they're technical. They try to not get too many penalties. But as we know, as coaches, sometimes that's bound to happen, especially at lower levels. But again, they are the heartbeat of our program for sure.
And those guys are headed to Penn State, along with a few other guys, a school that you yourself are quite familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
That pipeline is something that is really interesting. I mean, like looking back at last year's film, on any given time, you can pause the film and there's 4 to 5 guys going to Penn State, like in the one single screen. How did that pipeline kind of develop and who's next?
Yeah, good question. I think just we're blessed to be at a school that has such a good tie into so many good quality lacrosse programs at the collegiate level. It starts with relationships with college coaches. Obviously, I have a close tie in with Penn State and playing for Coach Tamburini. We sent a lot of guys up there. I wouldn't say the outside perception is that, you know, I try to coerce kids to go to Penn State because I went there. And obviously, I do want people to go there because I had such a good time. But at the same time, it's we want these kids to succeed. We are a preparatory school for college. In our even smaller, tight-knit community in our lacrosse program, we want to prepare these kids on the field to succeed at the next level, not just get to the next level. And obviously, we have 4 guys going to Penn State next year from the senior class and the 3 brothers and Brad Piffath. And I know that they're going to succeed at the next level because of the coaching that they got at this level from Coach O'Grady, who sent so many quality defenders to the next level to succeed in years past. So there's definitely a pipeline, but we do have a lot of guys going elsewhere. And we are excited about our entire team and coming together this year and putting some quality product on the field.
And another one of those guys to quickly kind of shift to the other side of the ball here for a minute that is headed elsewhere, that's a senior. And you guys have really just a crew of seniors, which is really important in an element that I want to get to. But specifically a guy that I want to quickly kind of dive in on is Ennis Udo. And his game specifically, like when you watch it, just really pops off for his smoothness and his stick skills, but also like his frame and physicality. When you watch him, what kind of sticks out to you and what does he kind of bring to the offense?
Yeah, I think beyond this, the natural talent that he has and the abilities that he has, he is a clear-cut leader within his entire class here at Malvern in the senior class. He is the guy that everybody gravitates towards, does mostly everything right from a coach's perspective. From a lacrosse tactical standpoint, I mean, he's a massive body to try to stop from getting to the goal. And that coupled with quality stick work, his silkiness, smoothness that you've mentioned, that is a tough recipe to kind of stop from a defensive coach's perspective. He is a load to handle on the offensive side, and he gets guys in the right spots. And again, much like most of our team, if not all of our team, the effort never is in question, will never be in question. It's 100% in everything that he does, every drill that he does, every ride that he has. If he turns it over, it's a positive, it's a positive reinforcement to himself. A guy that's never going to get tipped down on himself. So he provides that mentorship to the younger guys that are coming up in our program. And that's really what I think separates Malvern from a lot of programs is we constantly have those leaders that are being developed to usher on the next generation of leaders. And that's what we pride ourselves on here. And he is definitely one of those guys.
Yeah, I really wasn't familiar with him or his game at all when I kind of took over within this role. And then going back and watching as many like top tier games as I could get my hands on, he pops every time you watch your team play. He does something in a different way that is like, really eye catching. And, I really enjoyed getting to familiarize myself with his game. And just for fans listening, he's a 4-star headed to Brown that should certainly be a guy to keep an eye on as he continues to advance through senior year here and, you know, get to Brown and get on campus and really assert himself.
I think one more thing about Ennis is it's just the multi-sport component too, right? He's going to Brown to play both football and lacrosse. He played basketball as well this year. And he's a guy that takes all those transferable traits from those sports and applies them to the lacrosse field in springtime. And it really shows. He does a great job working with our attack unit and Mike Ortlieb and Hagen McTeer right now and some other guys that are going to be coming up. They've become very cohesive as a group. And again, those three guys specifically have done a great job in the offseason here, just kind of, you know, working with each other. We have some rules in Interact where we can't go more than three, but, you know, that affords them some game time opportunities where they can put themselves in position to score.
I didn't even realize that. So that is fantastic content. What position does he play in football?
So he played a little bit of DN, a little bit of tight end here at Malvern Prep. I don't know what he's going to project to in college, but I would suppose the same thing at Brown. So, he's a force to be reckoned with and on the field for sure.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Ortlieb, one of the top players in the 2025 class. He's headed to Duke. Can you describe a little bit about his game and what, you know, he brings to the offense?
Yeah, Michael is a very cerebral player, understands the sport extremely well, tendencies of slides, where guys are going to be open. That on top of his just clear-cut ability to put the ball in the net from low angle, in tight, and then his vision, I think, separates him from a lot of guys. His ability to break down a defense at X and find guys that are open in small slivers of space to put the ball on the stick so we can score the ball, you know, really separates him from other guys that are in his position at his class. But again, he's just another guy that he's a leader, right? Guys gravitate towards him. He does everything right from a coach's perspective on and off the field. He's who you would want in your program, and he can kind of teach those younger guys how to do the things that he does on the field. Now, one thing that Michael does that most others don't is he's constantly working on the wall all day to the point where he doesn't have lunch in the cafeteria. He brings his lunch to the wall kind of thing. And he's hitting the wall. He's getting shots up before school on the turf by himself. He's staying after practice late. It's those things that kind of start to permeate into other guys within our program. And then you start to see other guys kind of get on board, and that's where you see success in offensive side of the ball.
And there really are so many just studs on the offensive side of the ball, especially the 25 class. I mean, really everywhere, but the 25 class is just particularly loaded. Jake Bickle headed to Georgetown, Logan Turley headed to Harvard. Those two guys in the midfield to me really pop. What have those guys really, you know, brought to the table so far this season, and how do you expect teams to try and stop them?
Yeah, I mean, we have an abundance of midfielders that are very capable. Owen Mears going to Duke, Jake Bickle going to Georgetown, as you mentioned, Turley. We have Ryan Traynor, who's a senior, going to CNU. John Micah going to Army as a senior. I am thrilled with their progress in the early stages of the season, their ability to understand what is somewhat of a new offense for us. We've customarily done an offense over the last 13 years that I've coached here, 12, 13 years. We're kind of straying from that a little bit to give these guys a bit more freedom because of their abilities. And they're taking it and they're not abusing it. They're kind of running with it and doing things. I can't stand the term positionless lacrosse, but yes, they are working well together and understanding when to use screens, get out of each other's way, where guys are going to be. And again, we've only played at this point one game of the season in Georgetown Prep with one tonight against Loyola. But so far, those guys are putting themselves in great positions to succeed on the offensive side. The names you mentioned and others as well.
And you mentioned Ryan Traynor headed to CNU. He's one of, by my count, I have it as 13 guys headed to play college lacrosse out of the 2024 class. What's it mean to be able to have, you know, a group that's that deep, but also like not to just continue to use the word committed in the sense of like, you know, they're obviously committed to the sport if they're playing to play it in college, but like they don't get to that point without being committed to Malvern as well. So how does that all kind of like unfold in your eyes?
Yeah, it's a delicate balance, right? So we're, again, we're blessed to have guys that really want to succeed on the lacrosse field here. And obviously, you know, school comes first, so these guys do an excellent job in the classroom. But from a lacrosse program perspective, it's a challenge here to break the barrier and make varsity if as a younger player. It doesn't happen too often. So we rely on a lot of trust from the families in our community to understand that your son might have a longer road than other programs within our state. But if there's trust in our coaching staff that we will prepare them, we hope that if it's their want, they'll be able to go on beyond high school and play in the collegiate ranks. And it doesn't always happen right away. But when it does, it's usually guys like Ryan and other guys that are super committed to doing the little things right at all times. And, you know, they within our program do things that we ask of them. And again, hopefully that projects on to college and gives them some good experience and good acclimation to what it's going to be like when they graduate from Malvern.
And you've mentioned kind of like doing the little things and representing the program well and all of those types of things. Obviously, like, the field is one element of high school lacrosse, but then there's a whole nother element that is off the field and, you know, in the school and in the community. Do you guys have, like, you know, a core pillar or structure or something that you guys constantly kind of refer back to within the program? Or is it more just like, you know, one sort of a sense of community?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of buzzwords thrown around our Malvern prep community in general, but our core values here at Malvern are truth, unity, and love. We try to pull things off of that. You know, from an athletic standpoint, our athletic mission statement for this season for the 2023-2024 is lift each other up. And for our program, I mean, our guys came up with the motto that, you know, we're going to keep close to the vest, but, you know, our sense of community, we want it to be a more familial approach in the lacrosse ranks. So that's bridging the gap between the freshmen and the seniors, the sixth graders and the ninth graders. We want everybody to understand that they are a part of our community. They do need to represent us well, because there are a lot of guys that came before the guys that are currently here that have done the same thing or similar things that they are doing currently. And, you know, our guys are taking it and running away with it. They're doing a great job thus far this season of representing us both on the field, off the field, in the classroom, outside of Warren Avenue. And it's not inauthentic, right? So sometimes it feels forced by a coach or an administration telling kids that they need to represent their community or their program. These kids just go out there and live it. And I've seen it firsthand for the first month of the season here. I've been very, very pleased with how these guys are carrying themselves with adults, with opposing teams, with referees, and anybody they come in contact with. And that's based off of the core values that Malvern instills in them, but also the ones that we develop as offshoots from those three core values that Malvern has for our lacrosse program.
And those are the types of things that, like, teams just really need, you know, to be able to rely on and to rally around, especially with really challenging opponents, which is something that you guys certainly have coming your way down the stretch with, obviously, Loyola tonight, Calvert Hall, Valor, Boys Latin, St. Anthony's in Lawrenceville, and then Episcopal Academy leading up to Germantown. I mean, it goes on and on, the list of opponents, but especially that stretch right there of, you know, Blakefield, Calvert Hall, Valor, BL, St. Anthony's in Lawrenceville. You know, what's the message to the team ahead of that type of a stretch with so many challenging opponents on the pipeline?
Yeah, it sounds cliche, and my guys give me grief about it a lot of time, but I'm a big, I say eyes forward a lot, right? So we focus on one day at a time. Today is Loyola Blakefield. We don't really look ahead. Won't look ahead to Calvert Hall until, you know, Thursday afternoon when we're preparing for them, or Wednesday or Thursday. That being said, it's in their face. Our schedule is in their face. They're understanding what we are playing this year. And last year we had a similar schedule in the guys and the opponents that we scheduled both away and home. And the approach last year was, wow, this is a really hard schedule. And as a coach this year, I wanted to go about it a bit differently and just say, this is the standard now. I mean, this is where we want to be. These are the teams that we want to continually play. And I think if you ask any kid that's 13 to 16, 17, 18 years old that plays in high school, they'd say they want to play the top teams in the country when they play in high school. And now that's our goal, right? We want to put these kids again in environments that are both going to be challenging and also fun, but also it's gonna prepare them for the next level. They're gonna see really challenging opponents at the next level, and when you have 20 plus kids committed that are gonna play at the next level, it's my job to prepare them to play at that next level. And how do you do it? You play the best teams in the country, and hope that you stack up and you're right up there in that same conversation when the season ends.
I love it. And by the time this goes out, like we said, that Blakefield game will be done. Ahead of you, we'll have Calvert Hall and Valor. And so I don't want you to go start thinking too far ahead, like you said.
Yeah.
But we do have Coach Noble on the other side within this podcast as well. And that matchup, you know, Valor, one of the top teams in the West, coming out and seeing you guys, one of the top teams in the country, is just really a unique matchup. How did that like kind of come about, and what do you guys expect to see, you know, from Valor, one of the top teams out of Colorado?
Yeah, we're super excited to host Valor in the MLL days, and I've always kept a good relationship with him, and I see what he's doing with that program out there, and they're an exceptional team. And you know, again, don't like to look too far ahead, but we have to prepare really well on Saturday, the 23rd, for what is going to be a challenging game on the 25th here against a team that, again, is extremely good. Coach Noble knows what he's doing. He knows how to coach. He knows the sport in and out. And, you know, it's going to be a difficult task for our team to come out here at 1 o'clock on a Monday during our Easter break. And I know that our guys are going to be up for the challenge once we get to that point in our season, but definitely looking forward to the challenge.
Absolutely. All right, Coach. I guess my last question here just for you is, you know, there's a long road ahead, long season here still to go, so much room for growth. What's one thing that, you know, you're looking for your team to be better at the end of the year than they currently are right now?
Yeah, we pride ourselves on, you know, we say we want to win the last game of the season. That's our objective every year. And you'd hope as a coach that you're playing your best lacrosse in mid to late May. And if I could take the lacrosse that we play every year at the end of the year and put it right smack dab in the front, I'd be a very happy man. So the growth element is definitely something that we need to remind ourselves of. It's not going to happen overnight. We're a high school lacrosse program, albeit a prep program. We don't practice year-round. We're a month in. We have new players. I want to make sure that we're continuing to grow together as a team. We continue to develop that chemistry that we have over the last month or so of the first beginning of the stage of the season here. And hopefully we come out with a victory. We played the prep nationals this year, and the objective of that is to play and win the last game of the season, which is on May 19th. So if we can get to that point and win that game, I'm sure our program will be very, very grateful. But it's about, to not sound cliche, it's about the journey that we have over the next 2.5 months here, and we're looking forward to it.
All right, Coach. Thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate you coming to join us on the IL Preps podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.